This conference will.
Oh, okay. Lydia needed to get it recorded. Okay, the book review I wanted to do today was Discover Your Leadership. It's called Training the Leader Inside You. That's the title, Discover Your Leadership, Training the Leader Inside You. And it's written by Anthony Andrew Speed, who is a PhD. And, you know, to me, the reason I got so excited about it is I think somebody sent it to me. I'm not sure where my sources are. I got so many books coming in that people want me to review, so that's a blessing as well. So thank you from the hinterlands if you're making suggestions for me on book reviews, because I love them and I love to read and I love to grow. But this book was fascinating to me because it took leadership to a totally different approach to leadership. I've read tons of leadership books, and some of you have been through a lot with me on them, including John Maxwell's series. And, you know, I mean, there's just so much greatness out there, you know, Stephen Covey, and every one of them has a lot of value. But this was something so – it didn't have the same flavor as most of the leadership books that I've read before. In fact, he even had his own kind of description about what is charisma, and I thought that was incredibly intriguing. It was just a new way of looking. It's kind of like taking your brain and tweaking it a little bit. But let me talk to you. So I highly recommend it for people, but let me just run through. I'm going to try to get through as much as I can. I know I only have a half hour left, but we can still conquer a lot in this half hour. Let me talk about what this book is about. First of all, Anthony talks about tapping into your leadership. And why is that important for all of us? It's important for all of us because we are all leaders. No matter what you perceive yourself as, you are all leaders. Because if you had children, you led them. If you have a spouse, you had leadership there. If you work in a church, you had leadership. If you have a job, you had leadership in the job. There's leadership at everything that we do in life, basically. There's a certain amount of leadership. It doesn't mean leadership doesn't have to look like who's at the front of the room, right? In fact, one of my greatest lessons that I learned out of the Clemmer work was how incredibly well I could lead from the back of the room. And I just loved that. It was just so exhilarating to me because it was so new to me. And for those of you who have been doing it for a long time, you recognize that. But I'd always been at the front of the room. So to me, it was just awesome acknowledgement. But leadership occurs at any level, every level, and you just need to try to be the best you can be. That's the goal, is try to be the best leader you can be. And he talks about three processes for leaders. Interact with the follower in a way that the leader can, number one, reliably predict that the follower's future behavior. So you're trying to operate from a perspective that you can help support a person take certain action so that it becomes predictable for you, that person's action. And this is really critical in Manatech as in building a business, because if you can't predict their future behavior, then you can only predict their failure, right? I mean, it's hard. You're in this whole arena, and I think this is one of the reasons why a lot of Manatechers fail, because they're not stepping into that. How am I interacting with followers to be able to cause their behavior to be predictable? If you're not achieving that, then you're losing your leadership. You're already stumbling in leadership. Number two is reliably get the follower to follow him or her. In other words, why you want them to follow you. Not only do you want their behavior to be predictable, but you want them to follow you. If they're not going to follow you, then you're not really a quote-unquote leader. You're not leading them. And then the third one is, he defines it, he says the third process for a leader is always the basis of integrity, that you come from being real, that if you're fraudulent, if you're cheating a system, if you're, you know, denigrating the people, if your negative characteristics, your downfall and lack of moral ethics will deny you ever from being a quality leader. And we've seen leaders in our history of the world that have no integrity, and we can see the devastation that they created and the really ineffectiveness as a leader. They may have led some people, but they led them down a path of destruction. So the important thing is integrity comes really, for me, it comes first and foremost. And what this book talks about, it comes from, it says, you know, you need to lead from your best qualities, not your worst ones. And this was intriguing to me because I hadn't looked at this before, but the reality is that we all have best and worst qualities, right? If you made and one of the things I did as I was going through this book is I started looking at, what are some of my weaknesses? Where are my character flaws? Where are the things that are really, truly not the best that I would ever... And it was fascinating to me to focus on that. Now, some of you might say, well, I don't want to focus on it, Mary Jo, because I'll get depressed about it. No, that's not... I focused on it from a perspective of it's a huge open door for change. I mean, it's absolutely exhilarating to me that these areas need attention and I need to change and I need to work on them. And it was just a fun thing to look at, and I'd never come across something like that in a leadership book before. He also talked openly about traditional leadership versus participative leadership. And these are like what's happened in the past, our industrial age mentality versus where we are today in our world. You know, the traditional leadership was one person party rule. You had one guy who led the whole thing. His main task as a leader was what? To acquire more power. He just wanted to get more and more powerful. He deferred up, he controlled down, and he competes laterally. That's the nature of traditional leadership. The disadvantages of traditional leadership are massive. I just listed a few, but, you know, you stifle imagination and creativity in your followers. You trigger attack or avoidance behavior in people. You know, there's a subterfuge that goes on in organizations. You keep followers in the dark. You frequently engage in blame game and blame avoidance tactics. So those are just some of the many disadvantages. Then he talked about participative leadership, which is the motto is to train them up. In other words, your team orientation is, how do I get the best out of every person? How do I allow everybody to achieve their best? So it's about deferring down, controlling up, and cooperating laterally. The advantages are that decisions and problems get thoroughly examined in this process and not just dismissed unilaterally. It brings differences and conflicts to surface. It uses praise and encouragement as opposed to what you see in traditional leadership using money and status as rewards. So the main focus, of course, in participative leadership is to get the most out of your people. This is exactly where you want to be when you're talking about doing your Manatech business. You want to be a participative leader. So you're getting the most out of your people. You're maximizing their results, right? And so we all need to look at that. How do we need to be more like that? And if you look at, you know, when you talk about people leading from their highest and best qualities, in the traditional leader sense, the best qualities that they have there are like being efficient, forceful, organized, rational. Those are probably some of the qualities, because it's not that traditional leaders don't have qualities, as participative do. In the participative leader, it's operating out of his or her most, you know, prevalent personality qualities, which are conscientious, appreciative, considerate, cooperative, and interpersonal sensitivity, right? And then when we flip it the other way and we say, if that's the best side, if you want to work from the worst side, then you got a whole nother thing, because you want to tap into your leadership, into your best quality, personality qualities, all right? And the opposite side, as he calls it, our author, Andrew Speed, what he calls it is the stress self. So he has the leader self and the stress self. That's the play he works off of. Your leader self is when you're operating from your highest and best qualities, and the stress self is when you are stuck in operating from your worst attributes or worst qualities that you have. I don't know how you call worst qualities, but that's the language you use. His quality in and of itself suggests it's something positive. But here's what he looks at. When he looks at a traditional leader, if you look at a traditional leader, what are some of the worst characteristics? It's when a stress self of a traditional leader is argumentative, arrogant, sarcastic, fault-finding, hard-hearted, and hostile. Those are the negatives that come out of a traditional leader. The negatives that come out of a participative leader is what happens when you're with a stressed self. Some of you might relate to some of these: being anxious, complaining, dependent, passive-aggressive, and temperamental. So some of you might relate to that, and you can see some of those characteristics in yourself and say, whoa. And again, the goal here is that you're going to be the best leader you can be when you are coming from your highest and best qualities. And why is this book different than others? Again, I put in the outline, it looks at leadership and followership from a perspective of the human system. And the most important part of the human system for us is to master our process of own self-awareness. And, of course, a lot of us do that through self-development courses, whether it's Glamour Work or whatever else, and just becoming more aware of self. And even reading this book allowed me to delve into some of my bad characteristics that I can now be more self-aware of. And that was invaluable as a process to me, and I would just highlight it, maybe something you want to do yourself. learn your path to go from then. And what you do is you become aware of the worst characteristics. And the reason you want to do that is that where does change start? The first step to any change in your life is awareness. So if you sit there and you want to linger in unawareness the rest of your life in the unknown game and play that game, you can play that game in life and you can have a good life. But what is your goal, to be green and growing and being the best you can be? Is your goal just to make do? And most of you on this call, you're on this call because you have a goal that's greater, and I honor you for that. It's about growth. So it's about us stepping up and saying, hey, we want to be the best we can be. And he says the single most important element in successful interpersonal leadership, which is leading others, the single most important element is successful intrapersonal leadership. That's leading oneself. So if you can't lead yourself, then you're not going to be effective in leading others. So to do that, you need to learn the path. You need to learn, work on yourself. You need to learn the path to go from the worst. So understand first awareness, self-awareness, right? Understanding what your worst and best qualities are. And then the path to go from worst to the best. And using tried and true techniques and practices to get there, so that you can start eliminating some of these negatives that you carry forward. And all of us have them. We all have negative habits and characteristics and things, that programs that are in our lives, and we need to isolate them, be aware of them, and then we need to transition. And through this process, you're going to learn, as you learn how to deal with them and use tried and true techniques and practices to get around them, you're going to now be able to recognize these kind of issues in other people and help your followers to move from their worst to their best. And that's truly is going to be, you know, your best result as a leader, if you can help others be the best they can be. Because as you help others be the best they can be, they're going to fall in love with you. They'll follow you anywhere. So you want to help other people be more powerful and do it in your way, in a powerful, compassionate way, to help people be the best they can be. Then he goes on, he says, meet your leader self. Of course, leader self is what? That's the best side. That's your leader self. So you have the best and the worst. He believes you'll succeed or fail as a leader because of fundamentally two things: your degree of awareness of who you are and what you can or cannot do, and then how courageously and compassionately you come to terms with the worst of yourself. So does it take courage to sit down and make a list of things that are inadequacies that you have today? Absolutely. I was exhilarated doing it because I knew it was a mechanism to change, and that's why I fall in love with these kind of things, because they allow me to look at myself in a new light, and it's a mechanism for me to change and grow and be better. The best and worst qualities of a leader will trickle down and become role models for followers. So if you continue to carry the negative qualities forward to you in leadership roles, you're going to be setting an example and a role model for others, and they're going to duplicate that. You know, it's just like being a parent. You know that. Your child grows up and you can see behavioral patterns of yourself in the child, and you go, oh my gosh, they picked up that one. Oh, that's not the one I wanted to. You know, it's hilarious. I see parents talk like that so often. And they get discouraged about it because they feel like they've just ruined their child. And I said, well, are you ruined yourself? No. And sure they're going to have habits that they pick up from you, but you can always overcome bad habits, right? Right, everybody? Right? Don't give in to them. There's always mechanisms to overcome them. So anyway, they become role models for your followers as well. In your business organization, your Manatech business, you know, you're gonna duplicate yourself with other people that you sign up. If you have bad habits, they're gonna develop those bad habits because, again, you're the role model that's out there for them. He talked about immature leaders involving themselves in D&D, which is denial and displacement. And that's critical for us to be in a big avoidance around that. We don't want to get involved in the D&D. Where do leaders come from? Your experiences build you as a person, and that's really what happens in your life. As you grow up and as you have different experiences as a child, as a young, you know, newborn, as a young child, you build who you are. Your personality is built into you by experiences that you have. And this is a lot of this. Also, I related a lot to the Clemmer work, as we understand the programs that we develop in our lives, our belief systems, are basically 80 to 90% of them are formed between the ages of like 3 and 8 years old. So we have all these programs that are in us, and our personality, our roadmap. And these are the hidden tapes, as he calls them in the book, that really control most of our decisions. But you have a choice. You have, take for instance, if you have an anger program, and some of you on this call have anger programs. You can see it. You might be in denial about it. You might be in your D&D, but don't go into D&D around it. Acknowledge it, right? But if you have an anger problem, you can't just choose not to be angry, right? In fact, he even writes in this book, he says you can't choose a not. But you can choose to be caring, sensitive, powerful, and compassionate. And then all of a sudden watch what happens to that anger. Be caring, sensitive, powerful, and compassionate. Just like sometimes, you know, the sports teams cause me anger. Like the Texas Rangers might cause me anger because they drive me crazy, right? And Lydia always laughs. She goes, why are you letting something outside you control you? And I started laughing at myself, and I thought, this is a perfect example of what he's talking about in the book. Because I would get angry about their inadequate play or their errors or their things about them, right? And it was so crazy because all I need to do is shift. I don't need to choose not to be angry. What I need to do is choose to be sensitive. These guys are all 19, 20, 25, 30, you know, years old. They're like kids to me, right? Very young adults. And they're doing the best they can. So I need to have sensitivity towards what they're trying to achieve instead of, you know, being angry about some of the results that churn out. So it's important for us to, if we build a level of caring and sensitivity, and compassion in us, we can displace the anger. And that's just a mechanism of how sometimes we can displace things that are in our background that are what I would call the negative, you know, characteristics that are getting in our way of being the most effective leaders we can be. Why do leaders act the way they do? Because we're programmed to do that. We're programmed. And again, it's how do I change those programs? How do I go back and, you know, change out things that aren't effective for me? It's not nothing. You don't want to make yourself right and wrong. You want to say, are they effective? Well, how are they, you know, are these things effective? When I made my list of negative characteristics, I looked at each and every one of them, and none of them are effective for me. They're all totally ineffective. So if I want to be better, I want to remove those. But again, I can't elect not to do them. I have to displace them with corrective behavior that's going to be more effective, right? So anyway, but he talked about languages. Leaders must be fluent in three languages. And the three languages he brings up are the verbal brain language, and that's just our thinking and analysis side of our life. We're all thinkers. We're all analyzers, some of us more than others. Some of you wish some of us were more analytical than we are, but, you know, that's just everybody has a different, position, and it has a lot to do with their personality type and their quadrant. But they're thinkers and analyzers. They're people that organize raw data into words and numbers. But this is all of us have this verbal brain language. And it's important for us to have it. We need to be fluent in it. We need to be good thinkers, good analyzers. And so we work on being better at that aspect. Number two is the visual brain language. We organize experiences into pictures. We can visualize results. I can already visualize my meeting from, you know, Al Bala. This is a big area for me because I'm a big vision person. I can visualize what is coming down the pike for Manatech. I can visualize our mission. I can visualize our communication, our mechanism of a way to really, really get out there and trigger response from people. I mean, I've already got that, you know, and now it's a matter of just putting it in place. I've got to work on my verbal brain. But we as leaders need to have that visionary, because the vision sense of it is really what causes just your communication of the vision. Many times is what creates that sense of, you know, following. People will follow you because of vision, right? People will perish for lack of vision. People will follow you because of vision. Sam Castor has been quoted, I mean, many people have called him and quoted as saying he's one of the greatest visionaries they've been around in their life. And Sam is a visionary. I mean, he was the one who envisioned the whole Gift for Real program and then implemented it, carried it out through, he's not the implementation guy, but he played a role in making sure it got implemented. And then the third language that we need to be fluent in, so you got verbal brain language, which is thinking and the analytical. Number two is the visionary side of it. The third one is the feeling brain language. People of the heart, they organize their experiences into pictures from which they're ready to conquer the world. but it's all about the heart. This is the area that he feels is most important for all leaders, and he also feels it's the number one area where most leaders fail. That we leave out the feeling side of it, our feeling side of it, our heart side of it. In other words, are you communicating with people from your heart? Are you showing the caring? And remember, we talk about manatech so many times, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. That's huge. That's a statement about the importance of number three in the outline, that feeling brain language. You got to feel for people. You have compassion, sensitivity. All those things are critical. And I know some of you feel like, oh, man, I wasn't built that way. You are built that way. It's just you haven't let it come out. You haven't been shining on this world. And sometimes we don't shine. What causes us not to shine? Because somebody burned us somewhere. Somebody rejected us. Well, you know what? The amount of people that reject you compared to the people that will fall in love with you and that will accept it, it's got to be 1%. Is there going to be rejection out there? Are there going to be people that are nasty to you and mistreat you? And yeah, the world's full of them, right? I mean, sad to say, but that's all the more reason why we need to set a new example. We need to lead from a new example. We have to lead from that. We need to, because we need to help people displace the other way and see a better light, and that's the light we want to shine. So feeling brain language is so crucial for all of us and something we need to work on. So you can look at these three languages and say, okay, where's my weakness and what do I need to work on? Now we build up the stress self. Remember we talked about the leader self? Leader self is your best characteristics, coming from your qualities, your best characteristics, whatever those are. And then he talks about coming from, the stress self, meeting your stress self. Who is that stress self? The worst of you is what he calls your stress self. And that's the self, as he says in here, that if let go unrestrained, will tear up your organization, your systems, your hopes and goals, your followers, and yourself along with it. And right away we can start looking back and saying, can we see ourselves in different instances in our lives where that stress self somehow took over? Somehow that stress self stepped up to the plate and battered us. Yeah, we can see that. In fact, some of you might see it in your daily life, how you let that stress self take over. And it's hard because you got to stay awake, stay out of that stress self. The important thing for us to do is master our stress self and tame it, tone it down around the rough edges. And, it's something we need to do because you don't want, when you're coming from a stress self, you're going to, again, be mimicked by your followers. So you're inducing stress in all of your followers. And that stress self is really, the self where we're allowing circumstances to control us, we're falling into worry and anxious and all those characteristics that really undermine our ever being. And I was so funny after I read this book and I was thinking about now, some of you obviously I'm just taking it to a relationship I have in my life, but I'm doing some investing in the marketplace, and of course last week we had the greatest drop in years in the marketplace, 500 points in one day, and that was kind of stressful, right? But I was reading this book, and I was like, well, Mary Jo, what is this book really, am I really growing from this book? And again, then when they downgraded the debt, so we knew this morning would open up really, off another few hundred points. But it was intriguing to me because it was the stress level, it was self-induced. I was choosing it. So instead of choosing stress, I always said, okay, I took it and I converted it to a positive realm. How do I convert it to a positive realm? Well, every time a market shifts, there's a lot of opportunities both ways, right? So I started looking at, or just start looking at the huge opportunities that will be available Monday morning because, and what opportunities were available last Thursday because of the market drop. And so it became a conversion of taking circumstances and instead of looking at the negative side, looking at the positive side of them. And there always is a positive side. There's always a positive side. If you're stuck on that issue, I just want you to read Romans 8:28 and just kind of wallow in that verse for the next week and a half, 2 weeks, and you'll come to the same conclusion. But it's part of our stress self is self-inflicted because it's our choice of how we respond to our world around us. And some of you are negative and some of you are positive, but it's a glass half full or half empty. How do you look at life? And why do you choose that over and over and over again? And why are you letting that behavior dictate your life? choose different. Choose to be different. Remember, you can't choose a negative, but you can choose a positive. So choose a positive that displaces the negative, right? He also discusses about the comfort zone. He talks about us living in the comfort zone. And the comfort zone is not a stress level, but our circumstances, everything around us pushes us out of our comfort zone every day. If you're living any kind of life, you could live in a cocoon and stay in that stress zone, but I would still suggest that you probably have stresses in your life. So what he calls important, he says hardiness is invaluable for a stress converter to convert stress. That's the quality of shifting bad stress into good stress. And I put a quote in here, interpret through his voices and visions the way he sees himself and the other people so as to transform their awareness from bad to good. That's what we just talked about. How do I look at the glass half full, half empty, all that kind of stuff. But getting into the comfort zone, and I attached on the back of your outline, the last page, his picture out of his book, Discover Your Leadership, Your Comfort Zone and Your Power Zone. And it's really getting out of your comfort zone, acknowledging the positive qualities, right, that you might be unaware of as well as those you're aware of, and entering the power zone. So you're notice on the left-hand side of the chart, you can look at the last page in your outline, how it goes from a negative 10 to a positive 10. And that's all about choice. It's all about choice. Where are we going? You know, we want to go where our most powerful visions reside. We want to be in the power zone. That's where we want to exhibit ourselves. So it's outside the comfort zone into the power zone, and that's the direction you want to go. Because you're going to come across people. The important thing for you to recognize is that you're going to come across people all your life who are negative, anywhere between negative 10 to positive 10. And you need to know how to relate to them, depending on where they fall in that zone. And that's an importance of understanding yourself and how you're falling into that zone and how you're able to, you know, convert that stress into bad stress into good stress. Because what is good stress? Good stress is when somebody put you outside your comfort zone to create something incredible that you can't wait to create, but you really might not have an inkling of how it's going to be done. So there's some uneasiness in your life that you could call quote-unquote stress because it's an unknown, right? It's an unknown zone. But it's the power of knowing that the result is going to be awesome and taking that positive outlook and being that plus 10, just saying, I have the leadership skills, I have the followers, or I know the people, and I'm going to create this result. And just being optimistic and positive about it and taking on that light instead of getting into the stress zone, which is the negative leadership characteristics, and going into the darkness, as it has on the sheet. So the intriguing thing that he said in the book, though, too, is that stress self is the part of you of whom you are the least aware. And I think, I thought about that for a while, and I was thinking, I think people are aware. I think people want to ignore it. They want to look at it just as part of life. They dismiss it. They don't want to acknowledge it. So maybe awareness here is a concept of that they do something about it or they acknowledge its existence. Because some of us, our negative behavioral patterns and our stress self are things that we just feel are part of who we are. And the minute you start accepting that, you're accepting defeat. So, and that's why this book is so cool, because it kind of leads you to not accept it and just look at it and say, wow, these are the factors that are not allowing me to be the best I can be, and I need to work on them because it's part of my stress self, and that's denying me the leadership qualities that I really have to be the best I can be. So it's important to acknowledge that, and just the fact that he believes that we're least aware of them, and I believe it's we put the least amount of attention. I think awareness might be there, but we're just not willing to deal with them. We want to hide them. We want to take the broom out and sweep them into the dustpan and put them into our little garbage can that we carry with us everywhere we go. So it's in your knapsack. And I'm just trying to open the eyes of people to say, hey, let's start dumping out the knapsack. Time to move forward and clean that out. Replace it with some great, you know, good stress strategies. He said, how do you gain awareness of self and others? And he talked about, you know, using the read, feed, and lead process, which is new to me as well. Read the person or situation. Of course, you have to acknowledge what's going on. Number two, feedback to the person, your message, purpose, or intention to work with, support, and assist that person, but in their language. How many times do we try to communicate in our language and it's not very effective? So, and when we talk about their language, it has to do with all sorts of things, whether it's, you know, the language, what personality quadrant are they in, what are they best hear from, are they touchy-feely people, are they more direct, are they bottom line, are they, find their language and communicate. As I look at it, like from a Clemmer perspective, you might say, relate to them in their quadrant. What's their most dominant quadrant in personality, and then relate to them in that quadrant. So, and then lead the person to work with, support, and assist you in accomplishing the task. So the first thing is feedback to the person, your message or intention to work with them, support, and assist that person. So what are you doing? You're satisfying their needs first. In fact, they say that every leader, the reason people follow leaders is because somewhere they see the leader is going to meet some of their needs. And that's what we need to be. We need to be need fulfillment people, right? And that's what allows us. So important to get read, feed, and lead. So feed. Notice how feed comes there second. Feed and then lead. Read, feed, and lead. And that's kind of like when I looked at this, too, from the Michael Oliver perspective. When you remember when we read Michael Oliver's book on natural selling, and we talked about what was the first stage. It was always about discovery, right? Remember? It was all about discovery, finding out about the person. Well, that's what this is. This is read the person or situation. That's a discovery step. So many of us want to jump right into three, leading, and we've missed the most important. Read the person or situation. Remember? Read, 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 read. That's discovery. Two is feedback to the person, your message, purpose, or intention to work with, support, or assist the person in their language. That's like the need, right? Finding their need, that's the, your discovery was part of the finding the need, and now if you can show how you might be able to help find a solution for them, then you can lead them. Isn't that wonderful? So it kind of fits along the Michael Oliver approach as well. All right, and then the second part of the book, and we'll go over this real briefly because we now have 5 minutes left, which is, I just want to highlight one more thing too, because right before the end of that part of the book, he talked about charisma, and it was kind of cute. Remember I told you his understanding of charisma. Because we talk about charismatic leaders, and we can think about charismatic leaders in our past and our history and look at who they are and how we define charisma. And he takes the approach of this. He says, inevitably in a book about leadership, people expect the author to talk about charisma. The secret of charisma is this. I will see you as charismatic if I feel better about me when I'm around you. Isn't that amazing? So charismatic isn't about the symptoms of a leader per se in his eyes. He's saying it's how that leader makes other people feel. If you can make people feel better about themselves when they're around you, then you're going to be deemed to be charismatic. That's interesting. But he also noted that negative charisma also exists, so watch out. So look at how are people around you when you work with your downline. Are you making them feel good about themselves or are you making them feel bad about themselves? Would they view you as charismatic or not charismatic based on how he defines charisma, right? But I think it has a lot to do with it because charismatic leaders we usually look at are people that, you know, that just make you feel great. And the reality is that's true when we look back at who we deem to be charismatic. It's more a measurement of how we feel when we're around them. Okay, leadership strategies. Now, this is a great part of the book, and this is the part of the book that, you know, I kind of laid the foundation, as he did in the first part of the book, which is great stuff. But the second part of the book, leadership strategies, to me, is absolutely, you know, crucial. If you're going to get this book and read it, because the leadership strategies are the how-tos. They give you a lot of suggestions on how to move forward in your life about increasing your leadership abilities. And he loved to talk about the Myers-Briggs test, and some of you are familiar with that. It's like a personality quadrant test. It talks about what kind of person you are, and it has four different, you know, issues that they go through, and, you know, whether you're an extrovert or introvert, you're a sensor or intuitive, you're a thinker or feeler, or you're a judge or perceptive. And going through all of that to understand the beautiful nature of this is you can take the Myers-Briggs. I think it has a lot of value to it. You can look it up in the internet and find out all about it. This book outlines it very, very well. I took the test with my husband, and, of course, we found out of the four categories, there was only one that we were similar on. And I'm not even sure that's right. I mean, when it talked about extrovert or introvert, I asked him whether he thought he was an extrovert or introvert. He thought he was an extrovert. I thought that was an intriguing self-analysis. Because I don't know how many of you people know my husband, but I don't know that. I mean, if he's an extrovert, he sure is a very quiet extrovert. So that was the only one that we were similar on, and that I really had a question in my mind whether that was accurate. But it doesn't mean, you know, differences are differences. We're just made differently. And the importance of this is, of course, that when you want to understand what those differences are so that you can work with your, not only within yourself, but you can work with other people. Because, if you're going to communicate their language, you need to know what they're like. You need to understand more about them. And we need to spend more time understanding other people as well as, our own self-awareness. He also talked about, understanding our weaknesses, looking at growing our leadership. One of the ways of doing that is helping, by associating yourself with leaders who are already mature in certain areas where you feel like you haven't grown yet. And there are many, many great leaders involved in Manatech, many, many people, presidentials who I admire, who have incredible leadership characteristics. I can see their growth and their history, and it's just wonderful to be around them because they just are more intuitive, or they're more controlled. They exhibit a much more is much less stressed self. You never see that come out. In fact, sometimes people say, "I've never seen this person get angry," and I go, "That's right. She has an incredible disposition around stressed self. She manages it very, very well. She can take almost any situation, even when she's attacked, and she can convert it into something that's positive." And it's a wonderful attribute. Not all of us have it. Some of us are continuing to work on it. Some of us don't work on it at all. But it's part of that personality that, you want to be around those kind of people because they're going to help you be better. Centering yourself, two types, peaceful or powerful, and there's many ways of centering yourself. Peaceful techniques are self-talk, self-seeing, peaceful breathing, prayer, meditation. Powerful techniques also involve intense physical activity, jogging, boxing, running, screaming in a car could be good. But these are making, you're centering yourself is because both, you need both. There are times when you need to be very peaceful, there are times when you need to be very powerful, and you need to have techniques where you can tap into that in yourself. So, because again, you're working with people that range from negative 10 to positive 10 on that scale, and so it's you need to lead from all levels as you lead those people. And he keeps reiterating that again, the leadership is not a function of the head, but rather of the heart. You want to ask for feedback. Most leaders choose not to do that. Feedback's incredibly critical. I love to ask for feedback because feedback to me, number one, it's not truth per se, but it's their truth. So it can give me some insight into how I'm perceived by other people. And that's very important because perception is what it's all about. It doesn't matter who I think I am, it's who people perceive me to be. So it's important for me to show up who I am. Know how to follow the followers. You need to support them in meeting their needs. This, again, gets back to meeting their needs. And if you can do that or dovetail what you're trying to do with their needs, you're going to be much more effective. They'll follow you anywhere. Personality mentoring is an and pattern intervention are some other tools he used in here. I know I'm running out of time. He also talked about the true leader operates out of purpose, not self-importance, but of purpose. And that today we have an incredible, beyond everything else, we always had the purpose of healing and helping people with their health, and that is still major. But today we even have that overwhelming purpose of stomping out global malnutrition, making a true difference in the world in a huge way. And we're part of that huge game. We are now playing that. And then the last chapter in the book was about leaders know their games. And what is he talking about when he talks about here on the game? Well, some of you are familiar with the persecutor-victim-rescuer game. It's highlighted in many other books as well, where, someone gets attacked, so the persecutor is attacked, the person attacking them. The person who's being attacked is the victim, and then all of a sudden the group comes in and starts rescuing the victim. And this routine is very negative. It is very damaging to an organization. It's damaging to an environment. It's damaging to your effectiveness. Everything tears it apart. And what he's suggesting in the book, and he goes through the whole analysis about, leaders know the game. They know the games that people play. They know about, how people try to draw you into that game. the persecutor victim rescuer game. And so how to stay out of them. And you know, you can choose to react any way you want to. You can go along and play the game and then have the devastation occur in your organization as well as the relationships that are hurt. Or you can torpedo the game by refusing to play and creating a positive game in replacement. So he talks about that and the importance of leadership to be able to see that coming on and being able to avoid that kind of gamesmanship in the organization. Okay, people, that's it. We got through it. I'm only about 5 minutes late. Sorry. I hope you enjoyed the book. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think it gave me a lot of new insights in areas where I hadn't before. I guess, again, expressing some of the most important aspects of it to me were just understanding that I don't want to play in my stress self. I want to always be in my leader self. So how do I maintain a life where I stay in my most positive characteristics? And I stay out of the worst characteristics. Well, the best way to do that for me is always going to be to try to displace those characteristics, those negative ones, with something more powerful so that I can build myself into being the leader that I really truly want to be. And each of us can look at that and review it for ourselves. I pray that you get some blessings out of the book review, and if it's a book that you think could really serve you, then I suggest you get it. There are a lot of good material in there, and I think we all need to work on our leadership because we're all, as I said earlier, we're all leaders in our own ways, and the better leaders we can be, the more impact we can have on the world today. Okay, everybody, that's all I had. Anyone have any last-minute comments, questions? All right, everybody have a great week, and we'll be back next Monday with a new call, and I'm excited about that and hopefully new information for you around all the efforts that we're putting forth to grow this business and get people reactivated again and on fire for Manatech. Love you guys. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.